debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And we are hearing today the crying of children. This is the sound of America now, the crying of children. Children in detention, children in prison, children in dog kennels, in cages where even the ceiling is made of chain link fence, just like dog kennels. This is the new policy of Donald Trump in order to promote his racist base. Let's just call this exactly what this is. This is an election strategy that has been put together by Steve Miller and Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump and the racist base within the Republican Party. The New York Times reporting, this is from yesterday, from June 18th, by Jonathan Martin and Maggie Haberman. Forget tax cuts. Trump wants to rally the GOP base over immigration is the headline. And, you know, it starts out with the whole thing about immigration. But I would add to this, this is part of a larger racist package from the Trump administration. And the question I pose to you today is, will this succeed? Right. There is clearly a white racist constituency. There is absolutely no doubt about that. There's absolutely this white racist constituency, and that constituency is a strong and historic part of what used to be the Democratic Party in the South until the 1960s and has solidly been the Republican Party in the South since the 1960s. But it's not limited to the South. This white racist base is what these guys have been playing with fire for years and years. You know, the Nancy McLean's book, Democracy in Chains, is absolutely brilliant about this. In the last chapter, she talks about how the efforts that the billionaires, the right-wing billionaires, and she specifically calls out Charles and David Koch, but there are others. I mean, obviously, it was, you know, Robert Mercer and his daughter Rebecca who funded Donald Trump's rise to power. But what these right-wing billionaires are trying to produce, Nancy McLean writes in Democracy in Chains, is an America with favelas. Now, I have worked in and lived next door to, in a little church next door to, and surrounded by favelas in both Peru and in Colombia, in Bogota. And I've been in the favelas, the slum, the shanty towns of Mexico City. But I've worked in the ones in Lima, Peru, and in Bogota, Colombia. And of course, I've been to and seen much smaller versions of these in Nairobi, Kenya, in Kampala, Uganda, But they're not even like favelas there. I mean, no, the intensity of poverty that you see in some of these South American cities, particularly the cities that have been hit by neoliberal economic policies since the 1960s, as was imposed on Chile by Pinochet at the urging of these neoliberal fundamentalists, the Milton Friedmans, the libertarians, the people who call themselves conservatives. Their goal has been to reduce the middle class to poverty, but not out of some like hatred of the middle class, not out of some, gee, you know, we don't like average working people. They know that if they can reduce people to poverty, those people are more vulnerable to a demagogic message. They're more vulnerable to a leader who comes along and says, I alone can save you. They're more willing to follow a leader who says, oh, it's the fault of those people who are different from you, whether it's, you know, Jews or people of with color in their skin, people of color, or gay people, or you know, people who are politically different from you, communists, socialists, right, whatever it may be. They're the ones at fault. And you have a long history of this kind of thing just, you know, building around the world. That this is going on. And I want to, you know, I'm going to dig into a whole bunch of different pieces of this. But for example, over in Turkey, Erdogan, the president of Turkey, is running for re-election. He's been there for 15 years. He has decided that if he can destroy public education and replace it with hardcore right-wing religious education, dumb down the students, crank up the religious hatreds. If he can do that, he's more likely to get reelected, and future generations of Turks will support future generations of autocrats like Erdogan. And so, as Carlotta Gall writes in the New York Times, the headline, Erdogan's plan to raise a pious generation divides parents in Turkey. Public schools are closing on little or no notice and being replaced by religious schools. Exams are scrapped by presidential whim. Tens of thousands of public teachers have been fired. Outside religious groups are teaching in the schools. Erdogan has chipped away at Turkey's democratic institutions, purging the courts and civil service of suspected opponents. Now, all Mitch McConnell did was for 8 years refuse to allow President Obama to appoint people to our courts, including the Supreme Court. And then Trump gets in and they're fast-tracking all of them. It's the exact same thing. It's just being done in a slightly different fashion. Bring the media to heel. Oh, yeah, the lying media, the fake news, right? And he still has in place a state of emergency. We haven't quite got that far, although I would say that that's what's going on at our southern border. And it goes on to add what Erdogan is, they call these schools Imam Hatip schools, those cleric preacher schools. Preachers are the teachers. They note, the New York Times notes, they teach the national curriculum, but roughly half their courses are religious, and their core classes, which a student has to pass to graduate, are the Quran and Arabic. 15 years ago, there were just 450 schools like this in Turkey. Erdogan is now publicly funding them, just like Trump is doing with religious schools now in the United States, with vouchers. There are now 4,500 of these schools in Turkey. So it is exploding in Turkey. This plan is growing. Meanwhile, over at the New York Times, the report, how the Koch brothers are killing public transit projects around the country. And I'm going to dig into that in a little more detail as we continue in the program. But the bottom line here is impoverish the people. Because, you know, there's that pesky thing, that pesky, you know, what would you call it? Democracy. That pesky thing of the will of the people. We can't have that. And so we've got to build, say, the billionaires who fund Trump and the Republican Party. We've got to build a large enough coalition that we can get elected so we can destroy things like public transportation that only benefit the working class of America. So that we can destroy things like food stamps that only benefit low-income working people. So we can destroy things like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare that largely benefit the working class, the middle class, and the poor in the United States. And let those people move into favelas. Let's build slums. And it's beginning. I see it right here in Portland, Oregon. You drive down the street and there are these little tent cities of homeless people all over the place. This is how favelas start. It's improvised housing. This is the end game of these guys, according to Nancy McLean's book, Democracy in Chains. And I believe she's right. But the only way they can accomplish this economic endgame is to create a large enough coalition of voters to keep themselves in power. So how do they reach out to the white racist base? Donald Trump trashes black NFL players, and he trashes people of color from, you know, coming south of the border, black people and brown people. Again, back to this article in the New York Times, forget tax cuts. This is an intentional, by the way, this is an election strategy that Trump is playing right now. Make no mistake about it, it's an election strategy. Some Republicans are from states where they think it'll help them, and they're climbing on board. Other Republicans are from states where they think it might hurt them, and they're putting some distance between themselves and this strategy. But it's an election strategy. President, from Maggie Haberman and Jonathan Martin, President Trump sent his clearest signal yet on Monday that he intends to make divisive, racially charged issues like immigration central going into the campaign season. He gave a speech yesterday or the day before. He said the death and destruction that's been caused by people coming into this country will end. The United States will not be a migrant camp, and it will not be a refugee holding facility. In other words, no more people who don't look like us white people. They point out that more Americans actually still oppose the tax measure. So the Republicans are saying, hey, we can't campaign on that. So Trump's allies believe that trying to link Democrats to crimes, reading from the New York Times, to crimes committed by undocumented immigrants and gangs like MS-13 will do more to galvanize Republican voters and get to the polls in November than emphasizing economic issues. Corey Lewandowski, this generation's version of the guys in the 50s and 60s and 70s who were doing all this race baiting strategy. He says people don't turn out to say thank you. If you want to get people motivated, you got to give them a reason to vote. Saying build a wall and stop illegals from coming in and killing American citizens, that gives them an important issue. Excuse me. This is what Trump is doing. This is the sound of America. This is the America that Donald Trump wants you to know about. This is the country he wants to turn us into. He and Jeff Sessions and Stephen Miller are reaching out to that, and Corey Lewandowski and the whole bunch of them are reaching out to that racist base, including Mike Pence, reaching out to that racist base and saying, we're your guys. We're going to stop these black people from disrespecting us. God forbid, taking a knee, during the national anthem to protest black people being killed by police. We're going to stop these brown people from coming into our country and one day becoming citizens, because this is supposed to be a white Anglo-Saxon, largely Protestant nation, right? Bring back the WASPs. This was Pat Buchanan's plea. It is now Donald Trump's plea. How far will it go? How much success will they have? Do you know Republicans who support this? What do they say? What are their reasons? We'll be back. It's coming up on 19 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of the news of the day and your calls after this. And welcome back. Don in Orange, Texas. Hey, Don, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV today.
Hello, Tom. I appreciate your show, and I know you're right on. My comment is about the fact that I don't think that a lot of people realize that America's history has been with this separation of kids from their parents, going all the way back to slavery, and everybody.
And let's not forget the Native American genocide.
Should be protesting this.
Yes.
Whites too.
Yep.
But nobody is talking about what happened to white kids, you see.
Yep.
And that's what's kind of disheartening, because I don't think enough whites are understanding what this will lead to.
There's no basis for that empathy, Don. That's the unfortunate thing. So many white people have grown up in a white bubble with white media and white situation comedies, and that's, you know, that idealized Leave It to Beaver 1950s America is what the white Republican supporting many of them would not even describe themselves as racist. They simply view, they've never had to view America through a racial lens. They've never even had to think about race, frankly. They're made uncomfortable when they have to think about race. And so when you ask them to empathize with somebody who, because of their race, is being discriminated against, they have no reference point for that.
Yeah.
And that's, that's a major problem, right?
And I don't see, history is not being taught. And so
yes.
I don't see how they're going to be able to ever understand that, you see. Because
The media
doesn't even go back in history. They're dealing with right now. They're speaking of this poor problem, what's happening to the Mexican or the people from South America coming here. We created the problem that has driven those people to come towards America.
With the exact same neoliberal economic policies that the Trump administration, the Koch brothers and the Mercers are trying to inflict on us right now with their giant tax cuts. Build, create favelas, create poverty in the United States.
Yes. Yes. And even the policies of Reagan, and it goes way, way back, and I really don't see because a lot of people benefited from the from Reagan, Reaganomics. There were a lot of white people that benefited from it, but the policies that we did in South America is what caused it. Go all the way back to when we blocked off the water that used to go into Mexico.
But you can find a lot of this. In the policies. Going all the way back to the Polk administration and Abraham Lincoln screaming about the stupidity of the Mexican-American War. But really, it got put on steroids, the Central American policy by Reagan with the support of the Contras. And that was the rise of these right-wing governments in Honduras, Nicaragua, El Salvador, and that led to the ongoing violence, that and the U.S. drug policies. This is why these people are showing up at our doorstep. Don, very well said. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV, and thanks for the call. Very well said. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Just to amplify this, the Drudge Report. This is from Huffington Post. The Drudge Report featured an image of gun-wielding children photographed years ago in Syria alongside an article about immigrant children pouring into the United States. Christian Triebert is the guy who actually took the photo. He says the guns were toys. He said this is an obscene misrepresentation of the actual photo. He said, were gun-toting children photographed at the United States border? No. The Drudge Report used my photo of children holding toy guns in Syria without credit, without a description, and without attribution to illustrate a story about migration to the U.S. Well, gee, yeah, let's get some dark-skinned kids holding guns. Oh, here's a good picture. Oh, they're kids in Syria? Well, it doesn't matter. We don't have to tell people that. After all, we're just trying to crank up racial fear in the United States. This is the Republic. This is the official Republican reelection strategy. It's that simple. This literally is their reelection strategy. And in fact, the GOP insider, this newsletter that I get from the Republican Party, or from at least somebody who's representing themselves as the Republican Party. And this is what I got yesterday from GOP Insider. GOP Insider Brief. The headline, Trump bigger than Reagan. President Donald Trump is more popular than his party at almost any other reason than almost any other recent president, according to pollster John Zogby. Zogby noticed this week that Trump's high approval rating within his own party ranks him above every other recent president aside from George W. Bush at this point in their terms. And, of course, George W. Bush benefited from 9/11. If you look today, Zogby said, 87% of Republicans give him a positive approval rating. Well, the thing that I'm wondering, and maybe you know the answer to this too, is the pool of people who tell pollsters that they're Republicans shrinking down to nothing but the racist base? In other words, if you go out and survey and you're just, you're dialing and you're saying, are you a registered Republican or are you a Republican? I'd like to ask you some polling questions. And, out of 100 people, 100 of them say yes, then you got 100 people in your sample. But then you call back a couple of weeks later after people are horrified by what Trump's doing and you ask 100 people, are you Republican? And some of them say, no, I'm not a Republican. You can delete those people, and now your samples only say 60 people, and they're all the hardcore racists. Is that what's going on? I mean, you know, is this going to backfire on the Republicans? Or are they bringing more racist white people out of the woodwork who haven't voted in the past? Obviously, this is their goal. Obviously, this is what they're working on. What do you think? 27 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. On the line with us is Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon, representing the state brilliantly in the United States Senate. Senator, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thank you so much. Good to be with you.
And Senator Merkley's contact information, of course, merkley.senate.gov, and you can tweet him at @SendJeffMerkley. Senator, you were on the program a few days ago talking about what you had seen in the in these detention camps. What's the current state of where are we at right now with all this, and where are you at with all this?
A group, seven members of Congress, I took a delegation down on Father's Day, and we saw several changes. One thing we saw was that our border guards are now out at the ports of entry blocking people from submitting their asylum claims, preventing them actually from getting to the American side of the bridge in the no man's land between Mexico and the U.S. at all. And just to dramatize that, they introduced me to a woman who had a 2-month-old baby to say, well, she's here. She's here presenting her asylum claim. So I asked her, how did you get past the border guards? And she said, well, I pretended to wash windows for the cars and worked my way across through the car lane and then went back over to the passenger side when I was safely at the American end of the bridge.
Wow.
And I thought that's just kind of further emphasizes how Secretary Nielsen was really deceptive, because she was saying to the world yesterday, she was saying, hey, all the people have to do are crossing the border is come to port of entry. That is not true. There's a huge effort underway to make it extremely difficult for people to present an asylum claim at the port of entry.
This is what Donald Trump meant when he said we are not going to become an immigration camp or a refugee camp or whatever the phrase was. There's an article in the New York Times today quoting Corey Lewandowski arguing that this is an election strategy by the Trump administration, engineered by Stephen Miller, Corey Lewandowski, and Jeff Sessions, to this, along with the trashing of black NFL players, to shout out to white racist voters, to get out the white racist piece of the Republican electorate. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Well, I think the administration was thinking anything that shifts a conversation to immigration is good for them. They can claim that people are seeking open borders, which certainly the Democrats have weighed in time and time again about secure borders, but not throwing money away on a wall, and certainly not treating children and parents and families in a horrific fashion as some sort of deterrence message to the world. That is the sort of thing that's done by governments that have no heart, governments that are afraid to share what they're doing with the world because what they're doing is so terrible. It's absolutely unnecessary to treat asylum seekers in this fashion. I'm so deeply appalled by this. I think that if their calculation was this works in their favor politically, they have to be wrong. I have more faith in the American people than that. I just hear so many folks are tweeting and are calling up and are messaging saying, I cannot believe that that's what Lady Liberty has come to. No longer a light to the world. Treating people fleeing persecution with respect. Instead, now we're saying if you flee persecution, you wash up on our shores, that we will throw you in a pair of handcuffs, we'll toss you in prison, and we'll rip away your kids. That's completely unacceptable. I think the American people are going to reject that.
Senator Merkley, a few months ago, my wife Louise and I were down in Costa Rica filming for an environmental documentary we're doing with Leo DiCaprio and HBO. And we spent a week in that town or in that country. And when we flew in, we just grabbed a cab at the airport who took us out to this. It was about a 2-hour drive. And the cab driver, I was asking him, you know, what's life like in your country? And he was a guy who was in his 50s, I guess, maybe mid to late 50s. And he said, you know, we got rid of the army. He said, I have 3 sons. 2 have gone to college for free. He said, my health care for my entire family cost me a little over $100 a month. And I can go to any doctor, anywhere, anytime, no other charges. He said, we have a good life here in Costa Rica, and we're very happy with it. And,
yet we've got refugees coming into the United States from El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, countries that the United States played an outsized role in the 1980s and before. Why is there almost no discussion whatsoever about this being a refugee crisis rather than, you know, people wanting to come in to get on welfare or people coming in wanting to come in and steal our jobs? But we actually have a genuine refugee crisis, and there's an actual history here.
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of what we're seeing now, in addition to the challenges of the past with governments that were really criminal enterprises, now we have actual criminal enterprises that are taking over towns, running them from the government. For example, this young woman and her baby who crossed over by wiping windows on the car lane. So I asked her why she fled. She said, our family took a loan from a private bank. We couldn't repay it. So they have a very close relationship with the drug mafia that runs that town. So they sent folks to say, you either pay us or someone dies. And she said it was going to be me as soon as I delivered, so I had to flee with 1 month left in my pregnancy. And I fled, and my uncle was killed after I left. I think about the chaos of that kind of comes from the country having been so split up by many of the policies we had in the past down there that you're pointing to. Now, under Sessions' new definition of what it means to seek asylum, what qualifies for asylum, that woman would not qualify. In the past, it has been either the government is afflicting you or unable to protect you from forces that afflict you. That second half, when it's a criminal enterprise running the town, is now wiped out as a cause for asylum. So she made it to the U.S. side. She'll get an asylum hearing, but probably she'll be sent home. And who knows how long she'll live when that happens.
What can Americans who are listening to this or watching this right now do?
This is the moment to just weigh in so heavily with your members of Congress. I can tell you a lot of Republicans have told me, we know, we are horrified by what the president is doing, but it's immigration. We're afraid to talk about it. We will call up the president's team and whisper in their ear. Well, it's not acceptable to have members of Congress so intimidated that they can't give voice when basic humanitarian values, kind of the very DNA of America, is being violated. They need to get the courage to speak up, and apparently that's going to require their constituents to really say to them, we are ashamed. If you cannot speak up on this issue of trying to send a political message by harming children, you don't deserve to be in office. So get it together, stand up, speak out, take the administration on. This shouldn't be a Democratic or Republican issue.
Amen. And the telephone number for the Congressional Switchboard is 202-225-3121. If you don't know who represents you, tell them your state. They'll give you the name of your two state senators or your two United States senators. Give them your zip code, they'll tell you who is your congressperson, and they will connect you to that office. Senator Merkley, you're doing such great work. Thank you so much for dropping by today and for taking your Father's Day and going down and seeing what was going on. Thank you so much, sir.
Absolutely. You bet.
It's great talking with you. Senator Jeff Merkley, you can tweet him at SenJeffMerkley, S-E-N as in Senator Jeff Merkley. Merkley, and of course Merkley.senate.gov, the website for his Senate, his Senate website. We'll be back with more right after this. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. On the line with us, Frank Schaefer, the author of Letter to Lucy, a manifesto of creative redemption for the age of Trump, fascism, and lies. Frank Schaefer is a New York Times bestselling author, survivor of an evangelical fundamentalist childhood. His website, Frank Schaefer, S-C-H-A-E-F-F-E-R. FrankSchaefer.com, and you can tweet him at Frank_Schaefer. Frank, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tom.
Thanks for joining us. The most recent little clip from our noted Attorney General and America's most racist Keebler elf, Jeff Sessions, is this little gem that he shared with us about the Nazis.
Well, it's a real exaggeration. Of course, in Nazi Germany, they were keeping the Jews from leaving the country. But this is a serious matter.
Well, right. This is a serious matter. So, and before that, he had said that this is all biblical. And I recall, you know, Archbishop Mueller, the Reichsbishop, excuse me, of the Third Reich, justifying the Nazis' efforts with the Bible as well. Of course, lots of, you know, slavery was justified with the Bible. American exceptionalism, what was the doctrine of manifest destiny was, you know, the genocide of Native Americans justified by the Bible. Your thoughts on how this is playing out right now, sir?
Well, you know, we're in an extraordinary spot today, Tom. You know, I'm 66, and as you know, I cut my teeth in the religious right in the 70s and the 80s as the nepotistic sidekick of my evangelist father, Francis Schaeffer. You know, back in those days, my mom and dad were staying in the Ford White House.
In the Lincoln bedroom, I was jetting around the country in Jerry Falwell's borrowed jet, and we were talking about trying to rescind and roll back Roe v. Wade and abortion rights. Out of that has grown
a situation where we now have a government that is totally pagan on the one hand, with the adulterer, three times married, foreign president, con artist Donald Trump, but on the other hand has been put there by white evangelical voters that back in the 70s and 80s, my dad and I, people like Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and others, stirred up on the basis of standing on biblical principles against the secularization of our culture, whether that was gay rights, the feminist movement, abortion rights, and all these other litmus tests that became the kind of punch card for Republican candidates since then. So I was in on the beginning of the end, if you like, the end being now with Donald Trump, where the quest for power by evangelicals has become such that they will, like the Republican Party today, go along with anything he does, because he's not delivering anything for anybody else. Wall Street doesn't particularly like him. The global economy doesn't particularly like him. The U.S. Population doesn't particularly like him. Only a minority of people voted for him, even out of voters. But he is delivering for these evangelicals. The capital city of Israel has now been recognized by the U.S., and we've moved our embassy to Jerusalem. He has put anti-abortion justices on the federal bench across the country in increasing numbers. He has made nefarious remarks about gay people and transgenders and others. He has resurrected the kind of latent racism that's been part of white evangelicalism since the year one. And so he is delivering for this bigoted minority of white evangelical voters more than he is for other people. So when you fast forward to the present and we have caged children on the border, and by the way, worth noting, as you know, I'm sure, that these are not the children of quote-unquote illegal immigrants. These are the kids, people seeking asylum.
Right, these are refugees.
Going to what we just heard about the wall, you know, trying to keep people out and people in, and the Nazis and all the rest of it. Just remember that in the 1930s, when Jews were coming to America to escape Nazi Germany, if we had been seizing their children and putting them in prison camps, we would be remembered much the way we remembered, for instance, today, the Swiss who turned away Jews at the border, or think back to our own dark moment of interning Japanese folks, or beyond that, winking and nodding at lynching. This would have been added to one of the great sins, the historic sins that we repent of in the United States. So, you know, let's just pause for a moment. The religious right that I was part of in the 70s was quote-unquote pro-life. It was all about family values. We've moved from that to the people who have put this man in power, now going along with people like Laura Ingraham, who claims she's a Bible-believing Christian, going along with a man who not only is breaking up families, but is using the breakup and the torture of children to intimidate, not quote-unquote illegal immigrants, but intimidate folks who are coming to this country as supplicants for relief from persecution as either political dissidents or people who have run afoul of gangs or governments or other things, seeking relief as asylum seekers. So that this isn't even in keeping with our tradition of recognizing international law. What we now have is kind of the naked face of where Trumpism is really going. It's a bigoted racist movement driven by a madman. And the question I have for people listening today is, at what point should we just literally foment an overthrow of this regime by whatever means at our disposal to come hand into hand. And I'm talking about the 2018 election to take back the House. I'm talking about the 2020 election, but I'm also talking about impeachment procedures. I'm talking about a hue and cry of millions of people pouring into the street, literally making this country ungovernable when it's being governed by a madman who thinks that a two-year-old weeping her little heart out, surrounded by gun-toting ICE agents, represents the American tradition that we all want to plug into. This is past ugly. It is literal bullying. This is now literal schoolyard bullying. He is beating up on children, quite literally.
So, but Frank, that those two-year-olds, as Pat Buchanan pointed out in one of his last books, where he had a whole chapter about how America was about to become majority minority, you know, in the 2030s or 2040s, I guess, you know, that you'll have a voting population that's majority right. minority, and that this doesn't represent white Anglo-Saxon values. You said racism, or latent racism, I think was the phrase you used, has been a part of the white evangelical movement from day one. To what extent is this a naked appeal to racism on the one hand, and to people who are like openly racist and proud of it, or on the other hand, an appeal simply to racial, I shouldn't say simply, but there's a qualitative difference, but it's really not that much of a difference, an appeal to white people who may be unaware of their own racism. They've just lived in their little white bubble their whole entire lives, and they're just vaguely uncomfortable about people of other races, you know, moving into their neighborhoods, sending their kids to their schools, dating their kids, or working next to them. But they would never think of putting on a white sheet or going out and burning a cross or passing out racist literature. What is that spectrum like? How the white evangelical movement that has cast its lot with this racist behavior, how conscious are they of what's really going on?
I think very conscious now. I think it's the old story of the frog slowly being boiled to death as you turn up the experiment a couple degrees at a time, and it never knows that the heat is past the point of no return. That accounts for a lot of the voters. But today, when you have these little children weeping their hearts out in a country that supposedly is pro-family, and a president that was put there by people who talked about family values ad nauseum, we see the naked face of this. Look, let's get something very clear. When these families are rounded up and then broken up, the parents sent back without children and so forth, The level of violence against family values is total. One thing you could do more, and that is do what they did at Auschwitz and Birkenau, and that is tell them they're going to take showers and kill them. You're killing their families. You are stressing the children to the point of doing brain damage, as pediatric specialists all over the country are writing about today. That level of stress for a young child is irreparable. What people who stand on the sidelines and allow this to happen are proving is that not only are they racist and bigots, they are people who are literally so filled with hate and fear of the other that there is no line they would cross. You know, Donald Trump said that if he shot somebody on Fifth Avenue, his followers would still love him and everybody laughed. He's done something worse now. You know, gunning down someone in broad daylight on Fifth Avenue is not as bad as rounding up thousands of children and destroying their lives and turning their parents into distraught, suicidal
At least one parent has already committed suicide after being separated from his son.
This is a level of cruelty that usually, even in our history books, we try to hide. You know, we've done things like this through the past.
The Indian schools, slavery.
We did this to slave families. We've done this to race issues across the country. But here's the point I'm trying to make. If it wasn't racism, you could say, well, let's just say our southern border was, say, shared with Saudi Arabia or Yemen or some Arab Muslim majority country. You could say, well, there's a cultural thing. We don't have a Muslim history. We're trying to defend our Christian heritage. But when Pat Buchanan talks about defending the Christian West, these folks coming from Central America and South America and Mexico are either Pentecostal Christians, just like the happy, clappy white voters who put Trump in power, or Roman Catholics. So we are talking about doing this to literally, in Christian terms anyway, biblical terms, if you want me to go biblical on you, we're talking about actually breaking the commands of Jesus to treat your brothers and sisters in Christ as Jesus treats you. You know, the specific commands in the Bible to do unto others are all very well and good. But if you read the New Testament, a lot of what Jesus says, and certainly the Apostle Paul, has to do with inter-Christian relations. So even those are being broken. These children who are being taken away from their parents, just to put it bluntly, are baptized Pentecostal kids who have come to Jesus in churches, just like the ones the white evangelicals will go to next Sunday. They are Roman Catholic children. There's not even an excuse from the people supposedly defending Western culture that somehow it's being attacked at its root by allowing in a vast Asian population who are Buddhists or Confucianists or Hindu from another culture or Muslim. This is our southern border, borders on countries that are not just majority Christian. They are more fervent in their faith than we are.
So this is not about anything other than the color of their skin. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, okay, I got it. Frank, I'm sorry, we're hitting a break. I got to wrap it up. But Frank Schaefer, you are brilliant. FrankSchaefer.com. You can tweet him at Frank_Schaefer, S-C-H-A-E-F-F-E-R, and his book, A Letter to Lucy. Thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Jackie in Glenview, Illinois. Hey, Jackie, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I just wanted to say, you know, I was listening and I get so heated and irritated when I hear these people say that it's about, you know, immigrants taking our jobs and you know, not paying taxes and seeking this country. And I have a daughter who is adopted from Guatemala and she's brown. I myself am, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes, so is my husband. And I have seen racism in a way that I think even, you know, all brown families don't see it, because I see the way people switch when they see that she has white parents. But ever since the election last year, when Trump won, my daughter started having a lot of people say, you know, you're going to get kicked out. You don't belong here. Brown, you know, there's going to be a wall and your parents are going to be deported. And one girl, she actually even said, you know, you don't belong here. You're going to get deported and so are your parents. And she said, well, my parents are white. So, yeah, that's not happening. I'm adopted. And the girl goes, well, they should never have let you in. And a boy who I know from, you know, way back in first grade, he had Polish immigrant parents with thick, heavy Polish accents. He probably was the worst because she had multiple classes with him and he would say things regularly. And he one time was chanting, you know, deportation next to her in class in a low voice. And, you know, this has nothing to do with, you know, these kids aren't learning from, these are eighth graders. They're not learning from their parents about people taking our jobs. They're learning about hating brown people. And this is just a front. They're not, no one's actually saying the real thing. They just want to get brown people out. And when they use this lie that it's to, you know, to keep our country safe, it's a lie.
Right. And the argument that the Secretary of DHS yesterday made, Christian Nielsen, that, you know, there is a law against being in the United States without documentation. Yeah, it's true. And it's the same level of law. It's a misdemeanor. It's the same level of law as jaywalking. And yeah. when we, literally, it's the same level of law. It's the same level of law as running a stop sign. You know, it's if you don't hit somebody, it's the same level of law. I mean, it's a misdemeanor. And so when, you know, I'll believe Christian Nelson or Nielsen or however she says her name and Jeff Sessions, you know, when they start taking white people, putting them in prison and sending their children into foster care or putting their children in dog kennels, I'll believe them that this has something to do with law and order. This doesn't have a damn thing to do with law and order. This has to do with the color of the skin of the people who are coming into this country. As Frank Schaefer pointed out, it doesn't even have to do with religion, you know.
Yes. And, you know, like I said, I mean, from the time she was very little and, you know, one time we were boarding a plane and a train and the conductor said, wait, where are your parents, with their hand in her face? And my husband and I were standing right behind her. And I said, right here. She goes, oh, have a good time, honey. Go have fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, and that's just one example of millions. My daughter's seen it, you know, at 3 years old at the Children's Museum. You know, parents go, where are her parents? When she's doing anything but holding my hand.
Right.
And, you know, this has nothing to do with laws. And these people they're learning it from their parents, and it's just all lies. It's all a front to get brown people out.
or to simply demonize that. I don't think he frankly cares if he gets them out or not. He just wants to demonize them, just like he demonizes black NFL players, you know, and that cranks up the base. Jackie, very well said. Thank you for calling and sharing your experience with
us. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Good talking with you. Thank you. Karen, in how do you say that town in California, Karen?
Atascadero.
Atascadero. There you go. What's up?
Right, right. Well, I wanted to thank you so much for what you're bringing up about these children. I have been a social worker for 35 years, and everything you're saying is absolutely true. And what I do want to bring up is the sexual trauma and the trauma that these children will face. It is not a secret among social workers. We attempt to deal with this in our foster care systems. However, some counties and some states are much better equipped because they have more money. For example, I worked in L.A. when MS-13 was formed, and that is, these children came up from Central America already traumatized. They were already traumatized. They were thrown in the foster system, and we created this. I mean, as you're well aware, we already created this
problem. MS-13 was an American invention, yes.
It was an American invention. They fled up here, and once they got into the foster system, they were doubly traumatized. And this also happened to children who were coming over from Eastern Europe and Asia, I mean, and Russia and Asia.
Yeah.
And what people don't know is a lot of these children were victims of sexual abuse and became part of sexual upbringings. And it's not something that's talked about, and I fear this is going to happen to these children.
Yeah. And it also, I mean, they're putting, you know, six-year-olds in with 12-year-olds, and as these boys are hitting puberty, they become the abusers. And, you know, it gets very messy.
Yeah.
But it's a whole spectrum. Karen, thank you. Very, very well said. And I would just like you to think about the worst thing that happened to you when you were a kid growing up. You know, and just, you know, the humiliating event, whatever it may be. I remember teachers calling me out. I remember Dennis Lynch beating me up. There's things that I remember right from my childhood that I always thought were trauma. But I was never torn from my parents and put in a dog cage for weeks. It never happened to me. I can't imagine the kind of trauma. I can't imagine the kind of nightmares that I'd be waking up from. This is absolutely breathtaking. David in Pittsburgh. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi. Just wondering where the outrage has been for the last 10 years about this. This has been going on quite a while.
No, it's not. This was a practice, David, that when Donald Trump was sworn into office on February 16th, they had a meeting in the White House where Jeff Sessions and Steve Miller presented this, and it was decided not to do it because of the blowback. And then a year later, they put this into practice. It went into practice in April of this year. The children who are here without parents, who were in these detention centers or whatever you want to call them, during the Obama administration, 100% of them were children who came in either as the possessions of, or essentially of, coyotes or abusers, number one, or number two, simply crossed the border all by themselves. But
so those kids today, they're coming in with coyotes or false parents, which has grown by 300% in the last year, according to statistics. That would still happen to them.
That is not the group that we're talking about, David. That is not
traumatized.
The solution for them, obviously, is to do what we did before, which is you move them through the system as quickly as possible. The law says that they cannot be in detention more than a couple of weeks, and you get them into the foster care system. But these children came with their parents. David, if you are supportive of this administration ripping children from their parents, you have no goddamn soul. If you're supporting that, forgive my language, but I am sick of it. These white racists justifying this horror, this freak show in the White House, and the horror of using race as a way of gaining political advantage. You can go screw yourself. I am so sick of this. Sarah in Jacksonville, Florida. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I agree with you. I'm sick of it, too. I wanted to comment on the gentleman that called you earlier and said that if he had gone to jail, his child would be taken from him.
Right.
His child would not be ripped from his arms like these kids are being taken from their parents. And if he did go to jail and he had kids, he has family members here and wherever he lives who can take care of those kids while he is incarcerated.
And you can visit people in jail.
And yes, and he would know exactly where his child is. As long as he, even guys that go to prison for life, they know that their kids are with their moms or some relative or someone, but they can get access to their kids via letters or whatever, things like that.
Yeah.
And I'm so sick and tired of it, too, how people are ignoring this, but no one is talking about how many illegal European kids are here in this country. But no one's talking about that.
Right. Well, Donald Trump is hiring them, right? He hires European immigrants to work at Mar-a-Lago because he thinks it's very elegant for his white waitstaff and employees to have thick European accents. That's high class, right?
Yes. And then there's one more thing I want to say. I'm tired of hearing people commenting that Putin and Kim Jong-un are strong men. Those are bullies.
Yes.
They're not strong.
And bullies
strong
are
men
weak.
Would be more compassionate. But these guys are bullies. And they keep saying on the news, well, Trump likes strong men. No, Trump loves bullies.
Yeah, because he is one. Because he grew up the victim of a bully, his father. And,
yes.
and he himself became a bully, and that's basically all he knows. And now he's role modeling that for an entire generation of Americans. And that's the thing that concerns me the most about this Trump administration, is that there's an entire generation of young white kids growing up looking at Donald Trump and being told, if their parents watch Fox News or listen to right-wing hate radio, this is what you should be when you grow up. This is the American success story. This is who we
yes.
are. And this is not who America is. Sarah, thank you for the call. You said it so well. It is this is fundamentally un-American, what's going on here. We're going to check in with Luke Vargas in about 4 minutes with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the rest of the world today and around here, too, as well. And we'll be continuing to take your calls. And I got a brand new rant for you at the top of the hour. Stick around. So I just want to wrap up this rant that I was doing from the first hour and put it all in context and make it, you know, make it whole. There is a group of people who were, for the longest time, considered cranks, crackpots, starting with Milton Friedman, but he was the most famous of the Americans among this group. But going back to the foundation of the Mont Pelerin Society, which Friedman played a role in, von Hayek, Mises, these libertarian ideologues who believed, and you know, we have to give them some credit for this, right? They actually believed that the marketplace will always make better decisions than government will, because it's reacting to a million decisions itself constantly. Which is a reasonable belief to hold. Right? Here's their sales pitch. It's real simple. It's very straightforward. If a government makes a decision, it may go through a deliberative process. You might have 10 or 20 people on a committee, but it's still a small group of people making a decision that's going to impact the lives of millions and millions of people. So instead of government making that decision, we should have the marketplace make decisions. Because literally in the 3 or 4 minutes since I started this rant, there have been probably 100 million economic decisions made in the United States. And those decisions show up as people buying individual products. Every time somebody chooses to buy this product instead of that product, they are making a decision in the marketplace and moving the marketplace in a particular direction toward this product, away from that product. And so the belief that these guys held was, with all these millions of decisions being made in the marketplace literally every second of every day, that is as close to democracy, small d democracy, you know, ruled by the people from bottom up as you can get. And so that marketplace must be considered sacred, right? This is the most small d democratic of democratic possible institutions. And so if we get government out of the way and stop it from interfering with that marketplace, and let that marketplace, with its millions of decisions every second, basically take control of everything, then the world will become a paradise. And the will of the people will be done, because it's the people making the decisions. That's a very seductive sales pitch. The problem is, every time it's been tried, it's been gamed by predators. Every country, including the United States, that has turned capitalism over to the capitalists without governmental oversight, without the oversight of we the people, has ended up being ruled by the capitalists. They simply replace government as the center of power. You see it in the United States right now. Gillens and Page did this study out of Northwestern University back about 3-4 years ago, and they found that if you are in the top 1% of Americans, in other words, the people who control the marketplace, the odds of what you want being legislatively passed in the United States through the U.S. Congress or in the state legislatures, if you're in the top 1%, the odds of what you want getting passed are 70 to 80%. You are getting what you want legislatively if you're in the top 1%. If you are in the top 10%, the odds of your getting what you want legislatively are greater than 50%, greater than 50-50. So you have, you know, your thumb isn't hugely, your whole hand isn't on the scale, but your thumb is on the scale if you're in the top 10%. But what Gillens and Page proved, and you can look this up, is that if you're in the bottom, ever since Reaganomics, if you're in the bottom 90% of Americans, the probability of what you want being enacted into legislation, right? The bottom 90% of Americans, the majority, the vast majority of the bottom 90% of Americans want single-payer health care, want Social Security without holes drilled in it. They want Medicare without holes drilled in it so you don't have to buy supplemental plans from UnitedHealthcare. They want Medicaid that actually cares for poor people. They want Medicare for all. They want a single-payer health care system. They want our schools to be funded and work well. They want our infrastructure to be rebuilt. They want people to be able to go to college debt-free. They want a foreign policy that doesn't have 15-year-long wars in foreign countries where we really have interest and no business. None of those things are happening. Because every one of those things happening would slightly reduce the profits of some major player in our economy that has seized control of our government. And now you've got the Koch brothers killing off public transit projects. You've got Betsy DeVos killing off public education projects. You've got Mick Mulvaney killing off the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and throwing us to the tender mercies of the banksters. You've got Scott Pruitt dialing back on regulations that keep our air and our water clean and pure and re-poisoning us all, you know, with cancer-causing chemicals. You got Ryan Zinke tearing apart America's public lands and national parks and selling them off to the highest bidder, all on behalf of this so-called market, which has been seized by this small group of pseudo-capitalists.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And here's the kicker. They know their policies are unpopular, so they reach out to the racists and the religious bigots and say, come on in and vote for us, and we'll do your bidding. Okay, just the headlines today. Maurice just handed this to me. The headline from Mediaite: Trump doubles down in wild speech. Current border policy says you have to take the children away. McClatchy headline exclusive: U.S. officials likely lost track of nearly 6,000 unaccompanied minor kids. 6,000 lost track of. Richard in San Antonio. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hey, hi, Tom. How you doing? My name's Rich. Okay, here was. Listen, I'm just trying to weigh in on this child snatching at the border. I just want to say, ISIS, Boko Haram, Taliban. I mean, those terrorists over there. That's what they practice. And I mean, my point is, have we as a free country stooped so low already? I'll take your answer off the air, sir.
No, you're absolutely right, Richard. One of the signature marks of ISIS and Boko Haram is stealing children. And trying to indoctrinate them and trying to raise them in their cult, essentially. And apparently that, you know, the Trumpsters have decided that that's the way they're going to win elections. Richard, thank you for the call. Well said. Mike in West Palm Beach, Florida. Hey, Mike, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's up?
Hey Tom. I've been listening. Your points are fantastic. By the way, your response to the caller who was the soft-spoken Nazi appeaser who just called, it was a perfect response. The way these people try to kind of weasel their way into getting their point across is part of the problem in this country. And I just want to ask you and the listeners, this is the most horrific thing that this country has done in recent years. Where are the protest resignations? Give me one person in government who has resigned in protest. Where is a Republican who has decided to flip parties because of this? Give me one name.
Yeah, I see no profiles in courage here, Mike. I see none.
Yeah.
Instead, what we're getting are weasel words. You're getting Susan Collins coming out going, oh, this is pretty, or no, it was the other Maine senator. whoever it was, you know, saying, "Oh, this is a terrible thing. You know, I'll introduce legislation so that Trump can have his border wall, so we can stop this." You got Jeff Flake saying essentially the same thing. You know, Ted Cruz, "Oh yeah, I'll introduce legislation so Trump can have his border wall, so we'll stop holding these kids hostage." Yeah. That's pathetic.
Yeah. And until we need street protests, massive numbers in the millions before November, just to save this country. Let me tell you, Tom, if Donald Trump is on the ticket in 2020, this country is done. Whether or not he wins or loses, but if he's not gone, along with everybody who supported him, we're finished as a nation. And your point about Manafort and Lee Atwater, which I'd never heard before, brilliant point. But the monsters are not new, as you said, and I'll parallel. McCarthy, Nixon, Roy Cohn, bingo, right to Trump.
Right, so Roy Cohn was Trump's mentor.
This is an ongoing nightmare. And they're talking, and this talk about deterrence, which they're still talking about using children as deterrence. That's the most honest thing that this administration has said, that they are going to use Nazi tactics to get people to gin up their base and to get what they want from Democrats. It's the most disgusting, hateful thing I've ever seen. And I'll tell you this, Tom, I voted for Republicans before in the past in my 55 years. I've chosen Republicans who I thought served this country. I will never, ever vote for a Republican, no matter, I won't even look at the name till the day I die because of what Mitch McConnell and what Donald Trump have done in the recent years.
Amen. I gotta end the show here, but you said it better than I could have. Thank you so much for the call. Thanks for listening to SiriusXM. Thank you for being with us today. Call your elected representatives, like Jeff Merkley recommended at the beginning of the show, 202-225-3121. Call them and raise hell with them. Thanks so much. And don't forget, democracy requires you. It's not a spectator sport. Get out there, get active, tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.